Holy One is our shepherd. We have enough.
Enough love and longing.
Enough community and compassion.
Enough sacred and sassy.
Enough fierceness and fabulousness.
They make us lie down in green pastures and lead us beside quiet waters and restore our souls.
With friends who love all of us for who we are.
With supportive families and advocates.
In safe space gatherings.
And sometimes in this space, right here.
You lead us and accompany us into the path of justice and solidarity, and we find integrity in your way.
The way of speaking out and listening well.
The way of deep love and deep pain.
The way of celebration and protest.
The way of dancing and wall demolition.
Even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
where we are talked about, but not to,
where our giftedness is not received,
where our relationships are not honored,
where we are labeled and cast aside,
we will fear no evil, for you are with us. Your rod and your staff, they comfort us.
We lean on your word that speaks love and justice.
We lean on your people who speak acceptance and life.
We lean on your church, where it is open, affirming, and welcoming of our whole selves.
We lean on your spirit of praise, protection, and protest.
You prepare a table before us.
A table made from fallen walls.
A table covered with all the colors of the rainbow.
A table of fountains overflowing, and fruits and abundance.
A table where we are welcome.
In the presence of our enemies.
People and principalities.
Policies, procedures, and processes.
Dialogue and discernment.
Resolutions and yet another task force.
You anoint our heads with oil.
The oil of blessing.
For lives that are holy and whole, sacred and fabulous.
The oil of commissioning.
That we might go forth in our fierceness to tear down walls and set spectacular tables.
Our cups overflow.
Our joy overflows.
Our hearts overflow.
Our queer and queer-loving selves overflow.
With the abundance you pour out.
Surely goodness and mercy will follow us all the days of our lives, and we will dwell in the fabulous house of the divine forever.
Gentle Shepherd, come and lead us, for we need you to help us find our way. Gentle Shepherd, come and lead us.
This wonderfully inclusive morning. My name is Meg Green, and I am a co-president of Safe Space. Safe Space aims to affirm people of all sexual orientations, gender expression, and religious views, and yes, that means straight people too. Today, we are making history as we stand before you, participating in the first ever Safe Space Chapel, which contributes to the great sexuality series that is going on right now. I want to acknowledge that there are many different people in the world. We all know this. Some of us like blueberries instead of strawberries, and some of us just like bananas. Something like that can be said here today. We all hold very different views on life, on sexual expression, gender expression, church inclusion and disclusion. That being said, I would like to invite all of you to open your hearts or just your minds, if that's all you can muster this early in the morning, to listen to the perspectives that are going to be shared today. These reflections are from two marvelous people and dear friends who are sharing about wrestling with God, with faith, and the church from an LGBTQIA, the whole entire spectrum. I don't want to leave anybody out from that kind of viewpoint. So lovely Matt Noggle will be gracing you with his thoughts and his greatness first. Matt has been a loyal member of Safe Space and a passionate friend, and he also has a really great big green band that I really just like. So. And then Dallas Hetrick will dazzle you with her story after a short reading of one of Haley Brooks' poems from her collection titled Becoming Hollow. There are really great things in there. You guys should totally check it out. Besides making really great cakes for Safe Space events, she is a full-time cat whisperer and loving friend of mine. She spends her days among rare oddities, great hats, and more information than my brain could ever hold. Lastly, I believe that because today is so special, I feel the need to voice how much this is a privilege, not just as a queer person, but as a Safe Space member, as an EMU member, as someone who is queer and is employed by EMU. I also want to acknowledge those who have come before me, mentored me, and progressed this community. People like Christian Parks and Devin Four, those who have had to leave because of who they were, and those who have stayed and bared the pain of silent rejection, and so many other groups and people that I don't have time to mention. I did not mean to rhyme. This is a big day for us, and it is a big day for everyone. So please help me welcome Mr. Matt Noggle.
Good morning. Whenever someone asks me what my relationship with the church is like, I have to do one thing: laugh. No matter what my answer at that particular time is, no matter how I feel at that moment, I always laugh. Because I could talk for days about this very topic, and have talked for days about it. As much as I struggled with my relationship with God when I was first coming out, as much as I struggled with my faith, these days I struggle much more with the church. I believe this is mostly because even though I follow God and believe in God's promises, the church is the entity / institution that is supposed to be the body of Christ. It would be easiest to say that it's a complicated relationship, but even that fails to capture how I feel about it. When I was preparing for chapel this morning, I began to think about how to communicate this, and I remembered the story of the prophet Hosea, who was told to marry a prostitute. Later, after God has said how Israel will suffer for a time and afterwards return in faithfulness, God tells Hosea that he must not only marry an unfaithful woman, but that he must love her. For me, I can't even imagine being commanded to love someone, much less love someone whom I know full well will not fully commit to a monogamous relationship. And yet, that is exactly what I do. I love the church, so immersed in its politics and growth plans and converting the masses, that it is easily the most difficult and the most painful thing about being a Christian. About a year ago, I was talking to a guy that I met at church. We talked. He said he enjoyed my company and that he was interested in me, but that he wasn't ready for a relationship at the time. And this began a months-long roller coaster ride of mixed messages that sent my emotional state spiraling out of control. Some nights I would be happy and hopeful, but much more often I found myself in horrible pain, crying myself to sleep. Anyone who has ever been trapped in a relationship of any kind that is defined by mixed messages has likely come to the point where something, anything, has to happen, because being stuck in limbo with someone is no way to have a relationship with anyone. Either the person sending those messages has to start being honest, or the relationship has to end. For me, when I was finally able to get a straight answer out of my relationship with the guy I had been interested in for a while, I cut ties. Sometimes that's the healthiest thing to do, because continuing on with a relationship would be profoundly unhealthy. This is my relationship with the church right now. I, as a gay man who for a long time
worked towards a call to minister to the church, hear many conflicted messages from this institution that I love. On the one hand, I have met and choose to be in relationship with people who say, "We're ready for you. Come, bring us your gifts and your talents and sit with us at the table." On the other hand, I have also met people and choose to be in relationship with them who say, "We're not ready for you to join us. We don't know you or your gifts or your talents." And I have encountered and actively avoid people who simply say, "We don't want you here because you're evil and flawed and there is no room for you here among us." The problem is that even the people who are ready and welcome and accept me as I am tell me every couple of years after one denomination or another reaffirms their general exclusion of LGBTQ people. "Someday things will change," they say. "Just wait a little longer." The people who are ready to also admit that the church in general is not ready, and that there is no way of truly knowing when that will change. This is the same message that I received from a man I once considered a potential lover. In my hometown of Lynchburg, I can easily pass by at least half a dozen churches while I'm out and about that all have some variation of the phrase, "All are welcome." The problem is that most of the time, what I would define as welcome is radically different from what they are trying to communicate. To me, if a church is welcoming, if the church is accepting, it means that I am free to enter the space as I am, complete with questions and uncertainties and doubts and my sexuality, and have those aspects of my spiritual life accepted and embraced. Unfortunately, I have been to many more churches in numerous denominations that seem to recoil at the prospect of engaging questions and doubts, let alone engage with them with someone who is openly gay. My friend Lindsay wrote in a blog post last night, "While almost every congregation claims to be welcoming, it is a rare day when those same communities will go out of their way to find and welcome these people who are too scared and skeptical to enter the doors. I am not content putting all are welcome on a church sign. I want the act of being a welcoming congregation to be a daily embodied reality. And I do not see that happening in many denominations due to their strong desire to cling to doctrines which leave out whole groups of people. I want to be part of a living body, not a dying institution. For me, I tend to avoid most churches I see until I learn more about them, because it takes a great deal of effort on my part and vulnerability on my part to enter a space and trust that who I am as a person created in the image of God won't be attacked and marginalized yet again. I don't want to form relationships with people only to have them dissolve once they realize that I don't fit the ideal mold of a Christian. Every time it happens, a little part of me dies. A spark of my hope and faith in the church goes out, and a little part of my love for the church that hurts me diminishes. I love the church, but right now my relationship with it is that of a potential lover. I could devote myself to the church, but I cannot commit myself to something that cannot commit itself to me, because I refuse to be relegated to a little corner of the welcome table, to be approached when it's convenient for those who have the freedom to roam as they please. The church could be a people who fully embrace diversity and unconditional love and limitless grace, kindness for the suffering and justice for the oppressed. I believe that it could be all of these things, but many days the weight of years of hurt, rejection, demeaning, and love that died as soon as I spoke a single truth about myself that the church has inflicted on me leads me to conclude that while I have faith in God and God's promises of transformation and renewal, I have no faith in the church. On days like these, I wonder whether it is ultimately healthier for me and my walk with God to leave the church as I would a person. Ultimately, the church has become the biggest stumbling block in my faith, and even though I have great love for it, it does often remind me of Hosea's wife, Gomer. Thank you.
This poem is from Becoming Hallowed by Haley Brooks, a Goshen student. 1. At 13, my body finds every book of the Bible a text of terror.
2. In 1992, J.M. Clark and G. McNeil proposed a pro-feminist gay theology. In 1993, Robert Goss introduced a queer theology in his book, Jesus Acted Up.
3. The boys at church put their Bibles in their guitar cases and have memorized all the verses that keep me up at night.
4. I carry the weight of narratives that do not belong to me. I do not know my own stories.
5. Queer theology pioneer Marcella Althaus Reed published her first book, Indecent Theology, in 2001. She died 8 years later.
6. Every woman I love in the Bible dies. There are no women in the Bible who love me.
7. The girl I love does not read the Bible.
8. No one at church will talk about homosexuality, but everyone goes home and makes predictions about who will leave next. No one guesses me.
9. I exist in an idle space. I am allowed to breathe, but not to own my identity.
10. Some biblical scholars theorize that Jesus was gay. Far fewer have asked the same question of Mary Magdalene.
11. Our narratives exist in this canon. Is it not heretical to use them against us?
12. In the book of Judges, Jael existed in the space between difference. She smote Sisera. She crushed his head. She was a new breed of womanhood.
13. Hagar was sent away by Sarah in Genesis. In 1969, Betty Friedan labeled lesbian feminists a lavender menace, casting us out of a movement founded on our backs. We are waiting with Hagar. We are still waiting.
14. Rahab of the book of Joshua was unmarried, polyamorous, laughing, a subject wide and large and queer.
15. In the book of Samuel, David described Jonathan's love for him as passing the love of women.
16. Ruth clung to Naomi as Adam clung to Eve. She vowed, "Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people." How many girls are collapsing, dying to make this vow?
17. Julian of Norwich knew Jesus as her mother. Feminine by nature, wide enough to emerge from his own womb, he is a new body.
18. Mary Magdalene, apostle of apostles, indecent and holy, her narrative is one I can finally breathe in. I am whole here.
19. We are imagining God inside of our indecent bodies. We are taking ourselves back.
20. Interpretations of this text have been thrust against our bodies for centuries. It is a tribute to our suppressed stories. You cannot use this text against us anymore. It is ours now.
I've had a rather lengthy, circuitous relationship with the church and my faith. When I entered high school, I had the opportunity to join several leadership councils, including both the ones at my home church and in my conference. I've always tried to be very open with my sexuality, and I've worked through many talks with God on who I am and how I am with my faith. When I found out that I was accepted onto these councils, I immediately felt like I had to hide, because my home conference is not, I didn't want people to know that there would be a queer body in their space. I felt like that would cause them some kind of discomfort, and I've worked with that, and now I've come to the realization that, you know, it's okay to be uncomfortable in a space, but, like, talk about it, be open with that. In my time on these councils, our main topic was figuring out how to balance being both inclusive and keeping up membership. Surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, money was a large factor. What list of churches would leave if we decided that we were going to become an inclusive conference or an inclusive church? Would enough churches join the conference to balance out those who left? Would we, as a conference, as a denomination, as a people, be able to survive all of this change that was happening around us? Can we evolve to become people of Christ in all manners? Let me just say that everything is way more complicated than we would ever expect. Sitting in on meetings as a queer body, listening to people tell me that my sexuality is wrong and that I am wrong without knowing that I'm there and listening is one of the hardest things that I have ever had to do. One of the most striking things that I encountered during my time was a letter from a particularly conservative church stating that if we as a conference accepted and gave voting rights back to our accepting church, they would leave. On the bottom of their letter was a peace dove and the banner, "All are welcome." This was sent out to the entire conference, just to make their intentions known. In the past few months, my home church sent out a survey to all of the congregational members, and we each received anonymous responses back from those. I wasn't sure whether I could continue on at my church after reading those, but I know that the people there are still just as loving as they ever have been, but now I know what their stance is. And I've made peace with the idea that there are places and people that are welcoming and wonderful, but also perhaps that the greater church isn't quite ready yet, but that doesn't mean that we can't stop being advocates. And the more we talk and the more we have conversation, the easier that this will become. What I hope that you take from this, if only one thing, is that the church is trying. That there are advocates, that there are people, that there are places that are welcome. And every day we think about how to be more, how to be better, and how to live more fully in Jesus Christ. Thank you.
We asked both Matt and Dallas what songs they would recommend to follow their talks, and we're singing one of the two songs. Matt chose You've Got a Place at the Welcome Table, and we've sung that other times. We won't this morning, I'm sorry, Matt, but we will sing the one that Dallas suggested in sing the story number 124, My Soul Cries Out. My heart shall sing of the day you bring, let the fires of your justice burn. Wipe away all tears, for the dawn draws near and the world is about to turn. Let's stand, please.